Blog Talk Radio.
Well, 5 days ago, make it 6 days ago, the Jets fans were 1-1 and pretty much in a good spot. The Giants fans were 0-2. Oh, I'm sorry, this is about 10 days ago. And here we are with the Jets 1-3 and the Giants 2-2. The Giants looking pretty good, the Jets not looking good at all. And Seth a little bit upset with his friends because he just didn't go to the Jets game.
Which wah, wah.
I don't think I've ever heard. Happy New Year to those that are celebrating. To all our members of the MOTs, the members of the tribe, a very happy New Year. And it looks like we had an Indian summer this past weekend here in New York.
Yeah. Morning, everybody. I guess good morning. Good evening, everybody. I'm still kind of recovering from a cold. Sean, it sounds like he's pretty much sick. Seth and Sean's Black Sports Page, Sports Radio. Yeah, Saturday was great. Watched a little bit of Maryland football. Went to the park. Got to saw Jay-Z and No Doubt at the Global Citizens Festival concert in Central Park. Shout out to Brandy Gertz. Thanks for the tickets. Much appreciated. And then Sunday woke up and I was sick. And so instead of enjoying the beautiful weekend, because there was no Giants game, so I didn't feel any great obligation to sit home. And, you know, the hope was to watch the Jets game, but to go to the Jets game, but that didn't work out. The football was good, wasn't great. But it is much more encouraging to be a Giants fan now than it was 10 days ago. And as a Jets fan, it's, you know, playing against Detroit is a solid team. Chicago is up and down. But, you know, we had talked about the Jets, and we talked about in our NFL preview that the Jets were going to have to get through the first 8 games of the season. And they couldn't get through it 2-6. They would have to be about 3-5, 4-4. And then the second half of the season was going to be a bit easier. And you're not off to a great start in that regard.
No, 1-3, not looking good. Just overall, a bad weekend for football for myself, as my prediction of Syracuse beating Notre Dame didn't come true.
I don't even remember that prediction.
Look, they had all the chances in the world in the first half, three turnovers in the first quarter, and just couldn't capitalize. The defense was there, just the offense wasn't. I'd like to say that I'm very happy that for the first week in the NFL, we're actually talking about what happened on the field instead of what happened off the field.
No argument there. I think we're all a little bit sick and tired of the Jonathan Dwyer, Greg Hardy, so on and so forth. Although my fantasy team, of course, is still taking a killing thanks to Adrian Peterson. But, you know, there are some quick changes. I think today is going to be mostly a football and baseball show. We got the baseball. We have our end-of-year picks for respective awards. We have the playoff preview. Probably the next week or two we'll hit off a little bit of NHL. E.J. Manuel is out in Buffalo. Is going to be replaced by Kyle Orton. And I'm not sure if this is a short term or a long term. I'm assuming this will be a short term thing. But Manuel was not great in college and was kind of a surprise to go top 20, 21, 22 in the draft last year. Kyle Orton's been a pretty solid backup for many years. Does he, in a relatively weakened, seemingly weakened AFC East, is he the answer to get them to the playoffs? I don't think so.
Well,
but is it the right call for Doug Marrone?
Well, he's the answer in the Nabata Isles and Back Sports Page fantasy leagues for who will be the number one waiver pickup this week. That's certainly the answer. But getting to the playoffs? Playoffs?
Playoffs?
Anyway, my lovely Jim Moore impersonation. But, no, I mean, we said this earlier, that there's going to be one team from the AFC East that goes to the playoffs, and that's going to be the Patriots. I don't think the Dolphins sneak in, even though they had a good game against the Raiders, because everybody has a good game against the Raiders. And I think the rest of the division just stinks. I mean, I think this is a one-game demotion. I don't think it's a long-term thing because Kyle Orton's not the long-term solution in Buffalo. That's for
I don't think anyone.
Yeah, that's for damn sure. So the question, and remember, EJ Manuel is Doug Marrone's pick. He picked him. It's not like the administration before Doug Marrone picked him. No, Doug Marrone picked him. So he's got to go down with the ship. So if Doug Marrone's benching EJ Manuel, and remember back in the preseason, Doug Marrone is the coach of the Bills, for those that are unaware. Doug Marrone was actually complaining that the football operations had signed Kyle Orton because it would put a lack of confidence in EJ Manuel. And here we are today, EJ Manuel being benched by said Doug Marrone. So,
well, you also look back at who the backup quarterbacks would have been in Buffalo. Who was it? The guy that nobody had ever heard of that started a game last
Jeff
year.
Jeff Toole.
And Theo Lewis, I believe, was the other one. The old
Thad.
Duke quarterback.
Thad Lewis.
I mean, when you can get Kyle Orton, you know, that's not an insignificant upgrade. You know, that Kyle Orton is a very solid backup, and it was a pretty solid solid starter when he was with Denver in the pre-Tebow era several years back.
Look,
now,
Kyle Orton has won where he's gone. I mean, he won in Chicago, then he won in Denver, and now we'll see if he didn't really play last year in Dallas. But we'll see. I mean, you're right. He's a guy that can throw the ball. He has no mobility.
And behind a mediocre offensive line, that may be a problem. But, you know, the idea is that Manuel was probably not ready to start coming in last year. But there was no one else. And here you have a guy who can start, and Manuel can learn from him. He's out of everything, what everyone has said, he's a pretty intelligent guy, has his head on straight. And if you can take this as a learning, you know, learn from a veteran, sit back and look and figure out, you know, you have a stud rookie quarterback, rookie wideout Watkins. You have some decent talent in the running back between C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson. This is an offense with a little bit of talent here. And, you know, if you can sit back and learn from this, well, there's a lot to be said for that. Now, several hundred miles south of that, is there a quarterback controversy in New Jersey? Geno Smith struggled again. You know, the argument for Michael Vick, and Michael Vick has not said a word about starting. But you're one of the natives. You know, Rex Ryan has to win this year. The natives have to be a little bit restless off of a really lackluster performance yesterday, plus cursing out the fan. Are we starting to look at a potential transition at MetLife Stadium?
Well, you know my feelings on Geno Smith. I'm not a big Geno Smith fan. I've never have been. In fact, I believe 2 years ago, when they drafted Geno Smith, I was standing in a bar at Yankee Stadium ready to go into the Yankee game, and I think he got picked 37th overall. And when the 36th pick came, I said, please pick Geno, please pick Geno, please pick Geno. And then they didn't pick Geno. And then I went to the Jets, and I said, please don't pick Geno, please don't pick Geno, please don't. And they picked Geno. And I slammed my fist down on the bar because this is just another Jets attempt at shortchanging the quarterback position. If you're going to go get a quarterback, I mean, if you look around the league, the quarterbacks are first-round picks. Take away Tom Brady. Okay, take away Tom Brady. The legitimate top quarterbacks are first-round picks. Drew Brees was, I believe, the first pick of the second round. Aaron Rodgers, Matthew Stafford, Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, all first-round picks, some of them first overall. And the Jets consistently do not take a quarterback that high. The last time they took a quarterback that high was Chad Pennington. And they went to the playoffs with Chad Pennington. They went with Mark Sanchez. I'm sorry, Sanchez was sixth overall. The fact
and
is, they
and like him or not, they did go to two AFC championships with Mark Sanchez as a starting quarterback.
You have to draft a quarterback high. And when a high, I mean first-round pick. You need to sacrifice that pick and develop a quarterback. And the Jets seemingly do not want that. Do I think it's Michael Vick's job if the Jets lose like they did this week again? Yeah. Because they go to San Diego this week facing a light, red-hot Phillip Rivers. He's the MVP of the league so far, in my opinion, at the quarter pole. So they get to go face him. Now the defense has been playing great. Really has. Even against the Lions, the defense is playing great. Geno is reminding me very much of Eli Manning before the Super Bowls. When is the meltdown going to happen? When is that one throw that's going to happen that's just going to piss everybody off? And you know he's going to make it. Now Eli occasionally makes that one throw, but sometimes he doesn't. But Geno makes that one throw, makes that one stupid error every single game, and it kills him. And this week he did it he threw it to it's a 3rd and 10, and he throws it 4 yards short of the first down to Chris Ivory, who coughs it up. Is that Geno's fault? No. But why is he throwing it to a guy that's 4 yards short of the first down marker? Doesn't make sense. So, yeah, I think it may very well be Michael Vick time.
We'll see. As you said, it's asking a lot, admittedly, to fly 3,000 miles to play against a San Diego team that both of us thought was a Super Bowl, I don't even say a dark horse, but was probably the number two or the number three or number four choice in the AFC. And they have more than lived up to that capability. 3-1, a last-minute loss in Phoenix in Arizona, the first game of the season, which looks, to be honest, better and better as Arizona is undefeated at this point. Then beating convincingly the Super Bowl champions in Seattle and cruising the last 2 weeks. I forget who they played the week before. But they worry me in regards to the running game with Matthews out, Woodhead out. So I don't know if this long term this can last. But right now it's asking a lot for the Jets to go to Jack Murphy. I guess it's not Jack Murphy. I guess it's Qualcomm. What is the San Diego Stadium? It used to be Jack Murphy. Qualcomm. Going to Qualcomm.
Here's the thing that boggles my mind. So. And maybe this is just a new evolution of the passing game in the NFL. About 5-6 years ago, it was a lot when a quarterback would complete 60% of their passes, right? 62%.
Right.
That was a lot. Phillip Rivers is now averaging 72% of his passing he's completing. Now, that may be because of the West Coast offense. That may just be because there are shorter passes. But you complete 72% of your passes, you should probably win the game.
Well, and that's why when Ben McAdoo took over as the offensive coordinator in New York for the Giants, his hope was that Manning was going to be completing 70% of his passes. And that's happened the last two games. And you can see they've scored, I believe, 76, 75 points in the last two games, including 45 on the road in Washington. Manning looks the best he's looked in years. Again, it's two games. I hate that when people make two judgments too quickly. 4 games into a season, it's a bit tough to make these determinations. But as a Giants fan, this has been more than I anticipated. The first 2 weeks were admittedly less than I anticipated, but they've looked very sharp the last 2 weeks.
And we can stop calling Kirk Cousins the savior.
I believe so. He was what we call, to quote my compadre in crime, he's what we call ungood on Thursday, to say the least. But he will have another 3 or 4 weeks to see if he can become the number one quarterback in Washington, but certainly not off his best start in that regard.
I mean, Seth, I said this last week. He's not as good as he was the first week. He's not as bad as he was last week. I mean, he's somewhere in the middle. It's not fair to put either one of them. You're right. It's not fair to judge a guy based on two games. It's not even fair to base a guy judge a guy based on three or four games. I mean, he's at the start of his career. Is he a guy I think to remember, Kirk Cousins is a restricted free agent at the end of this year. Is he worth a second-round pick to a team like the Jets? I think he might be. He might even be worth a first-round pick to a team like the Jets. That
As
might
a Jets
be
fan, would you pay a first-round pick for Kirk Cousins?
I think it depends where my first-round pick is. Am I going to take a top-10 pick? No. But would I pay a top-10 second-round pick? Yes.
I think that's a thing that's reasonable. But I also want to see, as you said, I want to see what Cousins looks like in the next 4 weeks. I don't know Washington's schedule off the top of my head, I guess. I mean, I can look it up, certainly. But in a way, it doesn't matter. He has six, you know, most teams have 2 to 3 games. Most quarterbacks have 2 to 3 games to prove themselves. And if he's got 6, then, you know, that should be more than enough for people to get a feel for what he is worth on the open market. Or whether it's worth Washington keep him and look to trade RG3 if that's possible. Okay, here's who he plays the next 5 weeks. Home against Seattle, tough. At Arizona, brutally tough. Home against Tennessee, doable. At Dallas, doable. At Minnesota, doable. So he's going to probably struggle the next 2 weeks. I think that's relatively likely. And you're going to, and as someone who lived in D.C. for 10 years, you're going to hear the Boo Birds very loud and very blatant. On the airwaves down in the nation's capital. People want to call in and talk a little bit of football, 760-283-0846. Other takeaways from week 4?
Well,
or I guess you were
four. No, I watched some of the games. I mean, I was very impressed by what San Francisco did in coming back against Philadelphia. I was very unimpressed by what Philadelphia did on offense, which is nothing. I think Philadelphia won the Darren Sproles deal, a fifth-round pick for the production that they've been getting. Very impressed by Andrew Luck, 390-some-odd yards. Phillip Rivers, again, is the MVP of the quarter poll so far. Very disappointed in the Raiders, but then that's every year. I'm very disappointed in the Raiders.
I was going to say, are you really disappointed in the Raiders? Did you expect the Raiders to be better than this?
I said this last year. I'll say it again. I want the Raiders to be better. I don't like perennial losers in any sport. I mean, I think it really is bad for the game. It's bad for the fans. And look, you and I can say all we want about Mr. Raider fan. Mr. Raider fan is one of the most passionate fans in the NFL. They deserve a winner. And right now, they've lost 10 in a row. I mean, 10 in a row. Ugh. And they've lost their quarterback a couple of weeks, too.
Yeah. Now the question is Dennis – I mean, I don't even think it's a question of when or question of if. I think it's a question of when Dennis Allen is replaced out in Oakland in the Big O. And that team seems to have really very little talent on either side of the ball. It just seems to be going nowhere fast. And I'm not sure if that's a reflection on Dennis Allen, Reggie McKenzie, Al Davis, Mark Davis. Just everyone everyone correlated with the Oakland organization, but this has certainly been a long, sad fall from a team that 10 years ago went to the Super Bowl behind Rich Gannon and Tim Brown, where they have not made a peep in the decade since then.
Well, let's remember, even that season, those were veteran guys, right? There were no real young. I mean, the youngest contributor on that team was Charles Woodson. And he's back on the team. So, I mean, why not? I mean, why not bring the gang back together? I mean, Richard Gannon could probably play quarterback as well as Matt McGloin right now. So, why not? But, the NFL is better when the Cowboys and the Raiders are good teams. And speaking of the Cowboys, I wouldn't necessarily say that's an easier game for Mr. Cousins because they certainly impressed me last night. I don't know if you caught any of that game.
Saw a little bit of it. I mean, I know I saw the score, and it didn't seem much point to watch the second half. I know DeMarco Murray, who was a player I actually wanted in fantasy, and unfortunately I was in the same position every time where I never really had a chance to pick him, is running away with the rushing title four games in. It's an interesting team. On the defensive side, I'm not quite sure if that's just a reflection of New Orleans really just seeming out of sync. But Dallas's offense, when you know Dallas, for as great a passing game team as they've been over the decades, from Rogers, from Craig Morton to Roger Staubach to Troy Aikman to Danny White to Troy Aikman to Romo, you know this team won championships when they had great runners, when they had Tony Dorsett, when they had Calvin Hill and Dwayne Thomas, when they had Emmitt Smith, and if the offensive line can hold up. And they can kind of revert back to a more typical offense led by DeMarco Murray and then having the wideouts, what you do with Dez Bryant and Jason Witten and Terrence Williams. You know this. You know I'm a Giants fan. I like Tony Romo. And the offense doesn't worry me. The offense didn't worry me from the beginning. The question is, can the defense hold up? And it did look very sharp last night. But again, New Orleans on the road, that I find it amazing when you look at that division. And you look at the teams that New Orleans goes to Dallas. Atlanta goes to Minnesota without Adrian Peterson. Carolina goes to Baltimore. And Tampa Bay, without their quarterback, goes to Pittsburgh and is the only team that wins. That division is not looking sharp a quarter of the way through the season.
And even better, Seth, they win with the quarterback that we picked up in Fantasy Week.
Well, we are dominating in our league 4 weeks in. I think we're 6 points out of being undefeated, and we have the most points in the league by, I'd say, a pretty significant amount. Jordy Nelson. What did you say?
Over 100. Thank you, Jordy Nelson, Emmanuel Sanders, Reggie. Thank you, our wide receiving corps.
And Antonio Brown.
Oh, and Antonio Brown.
Yeah, that one worked out nicely so far, but again, we're 4 weeks in. The receiver, actually, that we should get credit for probably the best week this season, the best week. Best player, best receiver of the week, and really having an incredibly underrated season. And, you know, Sean knows I don't love giving credit to this team. How good has Steve Smith been in Baltimore? 7 catches, 130 yards, 2 touchdowns against his old team, Carolina, including one off a deflection for a touchdown, another off a diving catch with obvious pass interference. I may not like the Ravens, but their offense. You know, Steve Smith has really brought a new dimension to this offense, even without Dennis Pitta. I don't know how they're doing this, but they're doing it. And they're doing it relatively convincingly, beating a Carolina team by 28 at home.
Yeah, their offensive line is really clicking. And this was actually the first real week that the Carolina offense did not click and that they really needed a Steve Smith, who was playing on the other side. I mean, all their running backs are hurt. D'Angelo Williams, Mike Tolbert, and Jonathan Stewart. When the old adage is you can never have too many running backs, well, Carolina supposedly had too many running backs, and now they have none of them that are healthy. And when you look at the Baltimore side, they lost Ray Rice, they lost Bernard Pierce, but Justin Forsett, and I can't pronounce the rookie's name.
Lorenzo Taliaferro.
There you go. Thank you. Wow. Excellent. Well done. Lorenzo Taliaferro and Justin Forsett have certainly picked up the ball, but with every other team, it's the same thing. It's all about the offensive and defensive lines. And Baltimore's been able to play very well on both sides of the ball, probably as well as anybody in the NFL on the offensive and defensive. And they certainly surprised me. You have a couple of undefeated teams still in Cincinnati and Arizona, which you never would have. I never would have picked up.
Sean, you're fading out.
And Carson Palmer is back this week. So the question is, Palmer will definitely start. The question is, can they keep that role going with Carson Palmer instead of Drew Stanton?
Well, it's asking a lot to go to Mile High Stadium or Sports Authority Field or whatever it's called and beat the Denver Broncos there. Whether it's Carlson Palmer, Drew Stanton, Jim Hart, Tim Rosenbach, or any of the other Arizona quarterback, Cardinals quarterbacks over the years.
Neil Lomax, baby. It's all about Neil Lomax.
Neil Lomax to Roy Green. I remember it well. And since he is actually going to be at New England, so there's a couple very good games next week. Trying to think what else really to touch on. Pittsburgh. How, to quote one of your favorite movies, how in the wide world of sports do the Pittsburgh Steelers blow a double-digit fourth or blow a fourth-quarter lead to a visiting winless Tampa Bay team, having lost by 40 the week before with their backup quarterback and their number two wideout out? How does this happen?
Well, Pittsburgh is the team that's probably been most decimated by injuries, especially on defense. All their linebackers are out. They actually had to re-sign James Harrison. That should just tell you enough as to where they're decimated. My preseason defensive rookie of the year, Ryan Shazier, is out. They lost their middle linebacker. They've lost their left linebacker. All they have is Lawrence Timmons. Oh, they lost Jason Worldus. All they have is Lawrence Timmons, who happens to be now replacing Ryan Shazier on the Seth and Jones Sports Radio fantasy team. But anyway. But they are decimated on defense, and they're old on defense. So they are susceptible to these later in the game, long passes. And that's what Glennon was doing. He was able to throw the ball in the second half. And Glennon is not a bad quarterback. Let's remember, this is a guy that pushed Russell Wilson to going to North Carolina, going to Wisconsin. He started last year and played very well. Lovie Smith comes over and brings his guy, Josh McCown. But I don't think McCown's going to get that job back. I think Glennon has played very well in the two games that he's played. And Josh McCown's not the future of that team. But Mike Glennon very well may be.
That division, once again, kind of up in the air. You have to figure that if Atlanta, which we know, if I remember correctly, was your pick to win the division, it's very difficult to have faith in Atlanta winning any road game. But to lose by 13 in Minnesota with the quarterback starting his first game without Adrian Peterson, pull it up 41 points to the vaunted Minnesota offense. Of course, that's sarcasm in case you can't read it over the radio. You know, the guy McKinnon, his rookie, his first game starting has 135 yards. Jarius Wright, who nobody's even heard of, has 132 yards receiving. Not really reflecting well for Atlanta going down the line if you're letting up 41 points to the Minnesota Vikings. It's just not.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, their defense is not very good at all. And the question is, could their offense be better than the defense is bad? And we're seeing that that's just not the case. And their offense, yeah, they have Julio Jones, yeah, they have Roddy White, but they're really lacking on their offensive line. I mean, their right tackle this week was their starting tight end last week. That's a bad idea. So basically it would be taking, I don't know, Martellus Bennett off the right side of the line and putting him as the right tackle for the Bears and hoping that Jay Cutler can survive. That's not going to work. They've lost Jake Matthews. They've lost Sam Baker. They've lost a gluttony of tackles and guards on that offensive line. And without a good offensive line, you don't win in the National Football League. It's just that simple. So it's not surprising that they're that bad. Giving up that many points, that's a little surprising, but offensively, not surprising at all that they can't run the ball, and certainly not surprising that Matt Ryan is not being protected back there. I think we need to move on to some baseball, though, because it is postseason time. And the coronation of Derek Jeter as the new saint is over. Everybody has given him sainthood, so we no longer need to talk about that. And the playoffs start tomorrow, believe it or not, with the National League, I believe, is first. I have that on my phone. Hold on 1 second. I believe it was the National League is first.
No, it's the American League. It's Oklahoma.
Kansas City opens in Kansas City tomorrow at 8 o'clock. So it's James Shields, I think, against Lester.
John Lester. And before we get to the playoffs, so let's talk for a minute or two about Jeter. In regards to like Jeter, hate Jeter, sick of Jeter, and look, I think most of us are pretty tired of all the accolades, you know, for a great player, but not something, you know, this is not, he's not Babe Ruth, he's not Ty Cobb, he's not Willie Mays. That being said, you kind of had to have a little bit of chills watching Jeter hit the game-winning single on his last at-bat at Yankee Stadium.
Absolutely.
I mean,
look, Jason Garrett was remarking about a John Madden quote earlier this week, and he goes, "The first player on my team would forever be Derek Jeter, and I'd have a good team, and then we'll figure out what sport we're playing." I think that's a great quote, and I think it's spot on. Derek Jeter is the absolute perfect athlete to build around. And that's why he gets the accolades that he does. He may not be the greatest player of all time, but he might be the best all-around athlete. And I say that as far as off the field as well as on the field in our generation. I think he's better than Jordan, because Jordan had his problems. Jeter didn't have those. Or if he did, we just didn't know about him. So he handled himself a lot better than any other athlete, especially in a time where all we're talking about is domestic violence and child abuse and yada, yada, yada. It's very refreshing to be celebrating an athlete like Derek Jeter. And this is coming from a guy that can't stand the Yankees.
So that being said, one of the more interesting stats, and now we'll get off the Jeter bandwagon, was that game he played against the Orioles. The last game he played was the first time he's ever played in a game in Yankee Stadium where the Yankees have been eliminated from playoff contention.
Yeah.
Think about that. 20 years. And his last game where he hits the game-winning base hit in a typical Jeter opposite field single. The only game he's ever played in Yankee Stadium that didn't matter. Unbelievable. So going forward, we'll go through the postseason, our postseason predictions now, and then we'll go to the our awards at the end of the show. Kansas City against Oakland. Kansas City is a great story. First time in the playoffs since the championship year of 1985, when think about that. Kids that are graduated from business school, from law school, who are from Kansas City, have never seen them make the playoffs. They don't know who Don Dechinger is. They should. The days of Brett Saberhagen and Willie Wilson and George Brett to an absolute abomination, really an embarrassment of a franchise. And finally, led by good relievers, solid starting pitching, led by James Shields, and some timely hitting, led by Alex Gordon, who in a non-Mike Trout universe may be an MVP candidate. But going up against an Oakland A's team that is, 3 months ago was the pride of Major League Baseball. And usually a team that starts off slow and just builds as they go. And by the time they hit the playoffs, they're a freight train where they inevitably lose to the Yankees or lose to the Tigers. But this year, best team in baseball for the first 4 months and just absolutely collapsed 2 months of the season, well under 500. Kind of crawled in backwards into the playoffs, holding off a surging Mariners team. They bring in Lester to help them win a championship. Lester's got to get them through the wild card game. Do you think he does it?
Well, the one player that has played well throughout has been John Lester. He's pitched incredibly well throughout. I think he's 6-2 with the A's. He's a lefty. He goes against a Kansas City team that is susceptible against lefties. That's why they held him for this game. I so want the Royals to win this game. I just don't see it happening. I'm picking the Oakland Athletics.
I think that's what pretty much the world is saying, that everyone wants Kansas City to win. Everyone thinks Oakland's going to win. And I think it's almost similar to what's going to be happening in the National League game as well. The San Francisco Giants, have won 2 World Series in the last 5 years. A stud pitching staff, solid and professional team. The Pirates, back-to-back playoff appearances for the first time in – well, first time since – they appeared last year for the first time since 92. Andrew McCutchen is still clutch. I think Pittsburgh has a better chance than say, the Royals. I'm not sure if I love the Edison Velasquez-Madison Baumgartner matchup. I'm going to go with Pittsburgh here. I don't really know why I'm going with Pittsburgh. Maybe it's just I'm hoping more than anything else. But San Francisco doesn't seem to be the same team they were the last few years. And I'm gonna give Pittsburgh the edge here for one game anyway.
Well, that makes two of us, because I like that Velasquez is pitching. I think the fact that they are throwing a lefty, both teams are throwing lefties, is good for Pittsburgh rather than good for San Francisco. Baumgartner is solid, but is not the pitcher he's been in the past. The relief is just not there that it was last year. You're right, it's one game. I think the home field advantage for Pittsburgh is a lot more valuable than any other team in baseball, and I have them winning this game and going on to the second round. The second round would then be the All-Star wild card, so we both have Oakland, going against L.A.
No.
Or Anaheim.
Oh, against the Anaheim.
Yeah. So you don't have Lester pitching twice. Well, you might. You might have him in game 3 and game 7. You'll have some larger pitching game 1 and game 4 against Weaver. And I'll tell you right now, I believe whoever gets out of that Kansas City-Oakland matchup wins this series.
Really?
I have not liked the Angels all year. You're right, they have the best record in baseball. But they have the best record in baseball when they had a guy named Garrett Richards pitching throughout the year. Granted, he missed all of September. They've been knocked down with injuries recently. Yeah, Trout's been great, but I don't like their pitching. And I do like Oakland's pitching. I've liked them the whole year, and I like Kansas City's as well. And I'm thinking that L.A. gets knocked out in the first round. In their first round.
Now, what's interesting is, especially if you have Kansas City making it forward, is you have two teams with practically no real postseason experience. A lot of the Angels were not there for their playoff teams in the late part of the first part of the millennium, the first decade of the millennium, excuse me. I kind of agree with you on Oakland, what the past has shown is just because you struggled coming into the playoffs is not automatically a reflection of what you're going to be doing going forward. I don't think Kansas City beats Anaheim. I think Oakland gives them a heck of a run. The other series that we have is Detroit versus Baltimore. Not only surprising that they won, but I think shocking by the margin that they won by, winning the AL East, which admittedly was not at its strongest, by double digits. Detroit, on the other hand, struggled mightily, only clinching the division on the last game of the season. But yet, when I look at these teams, I don't see a definitive. I don't see Baltimore having an advantage anywhere. Am I wrong?
No, I don't see them having a starting pitching.
You know you're throwing Scherzer, you're throwing Price, you're throwing Porcello. If you want to throw Sanchez, you can do that too. You're throwing Tillman.
There's also a fifth guy who you mentioned who admittedly has had a bad year. But we're talking a year or two off Justin Verlander being the best pitcher in baseball. So it's
I kind of eliminated probably their number two starter right there. So that's kind of bad. But the fact, I don't see how, and Baltimore, granted, Chris Davis hasn't played well all year, but he's suspended for 8 games, so he won't be in this series. I don't see how they win. So I'm picking Detroit, and I'm picking Oakland in the championships. And so Detroit would get the home field in that situation. And here we go again with redundancy. I think Detroit shows up in the World Series again.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty sensible call. I have Detroit in California. I do, or Anaheim, or whatever it is. The Anaheim-Oakland series to me is a 7-game toss-up. But Detroit has the most talent. Victor Martinez, Miggy may not have been as great this year. Victor Martinez has been sensational. Their pitching is just too strong, I think, for anyone in the American League. And, you know, I think in a lot of ways they almost take part of that time off. You know, they kind of cruise after making the series the last 3 years. I think.
Okay, let's move on nationally. Sorry. So we both have Pittsburgh winning. So then we have Pittsburgh going against the Nationals. I don't see anybody beating the Nationals in the first round. I just don't.
No. But again,
I said this in July. I'll say it again. They remind me of the 1986 Mets. They really do. They find a way to win. Even on the last game of the season, Jordan Zimmermann pitches a no-hitter, and the ball that was hit for the last out had to be dove for to catch, and it's still got a no-hitter. This is a team that I think is winning the whole thing right here. But I certainly see them beating the Pirates. I would love to see the Pirates win. I just don't think it's going to happen. I see them winning in 5.
I agree. I think Washington is probably the best team in baseball right now. They've been the best team in baseball the last 4 months of the season. As much as we'd like to see Pittsburgh make a run, I don't think anyone sees it right now. So I don't think anyone sees them beating Washington. Going on to the second game, the second series, which to me is the most interesting playoff series that there is, you have the overwhelmingly more talented Los Angeles Dodgers against the St. Louis Cardinals. And from a talent-wise, I think it's difficult to see the Dodgers winning, to see the Cardinals winning, just from a strictly talent perspective. However, St. Louis always seems to find a way. And as great as Clayton Kershaw has been, the rest of the pitching staff, you know, we don't know, is Ryu back for the playoffs?
I don't think so. The rest of the team is 20-1 when Kershaw has pitched this year. So basically, they're going to be up 2-0. It's kind of like a handicap. We've given the Dodgers a 2-0 handicap. So, or actually, I'm sorry, we've given the Cardinals a 2-0 handicap. So they got to win 3 out of the 5 games, or 4 out of the 5 games that Kershaw does not pitch. So that's the question. Can they do that? And remember, Wainwright's going to go up against Kershaw. So
Wainwright may also very well be the second best pitcher in baseball. So
absolutely.
I would not, while Kershaw has been, I don't think it's 20-1 because he has a couple of losses, but
no,
he's 20. Kershaw's 21-3.
I didn't hear
you say that part.
The last 21 games that he has pitched in, they are 20-1.
No. Now again, is this a 5-game series or a 7-game series? The divisional series, I think, is 5 games, not 7.
You're right; they're 5.
So you got to win one out of – you got to win all three.
I'm going to say they do. I just – the Dodgers just strike me as almost a team that will always find a way. I'm trying to think of a comparison. I'm kind of almost going back to like the San Jose Sharks in hockey. They're just going to find a way to self-destruct here.
Did you really just use a hockey reference?
Is it a good call? Is it a good reference for my point?
I'm very proud of you. You used a hockey reference. Wow.
But more importantly, is it from where I'm going? It makes sense, correct?
No, it's correct. Look,
woohoo!
Look, Clayton Kershaw is Joe Thornton.
Well,
that's
Clayton Kershaw.
What you're saying?
Yeah. I like the Cardinals. The Cardinals find ways to win these playoff series, and I see no reason.
Okay. So do you like the Cardinals over the Nationals, though?
No.
Okay, so we both get to the same spot.
Yeah, just a different way. The Nationals, if you remember correctly, last year the Nationals very well should have won their playoff series with the Cardinals and lost it in the ninth inning or the eighth inning, had a lead. I think Washington learns from this experience. I think they're the best team in baseball. I think they have the most talent in baseball. I think they win probably in five or six.
Okay, so now we're down to the Nationals versus the Dodgers.
Well,
or
you are.
Nationals,
I have the Nationals over the Cardinals.
Yeah. Nationals. The Nationals versus the Tigers. Excuse me.
You have the Nationals over the Dodgers, I assume.
Yes. And I'm taking the Nationals all. I mean, I think they win the whole thing. I said that at the beginning of the year. I'll keep going with it.
And I think I had said I took the Tigers to win at the beginning of the year. I still like the pick. I don't think they've been great this whole season. I think they've cruised. I think everyone knows that they've cruised. But if this is your World Series, this is a hell of a series. This is great pitching on both sides. I think Detroit's hitting is better. I think usually I know that's not the difference. I think in this case it is. And I think Detroit wins the series. There you go.
There we go.
Baseball
so,
picks and using a hockey reference. That doesn't happen too often.
So your AL MVP.
Where should I possibly go with this?
Could it be anybody
other than
Mike Trout?
Is Miggy Cabrera available for this pick?
He is.
Somehow I still think I'll pass. Mike Trout wins this. He probably wins this unanimously. There have been other players who've had great years. Robinson Cano has almost lived up to his contract in Seattle. Victor Martinez has had a great year in Detroit. Mike Trout wins this. If not unanimously, it'll be I don't know who else would get a vote, to be honest.
Well, you know one guy that's definitely getting a vote. Derek Jeter. He's got to get a vote.
No, Derek Jeter lost his chance a couple in 06 and in 09 and back in 2000. I don't think he's getting any MVP votes.
Well, the only thing that you need to know is that there has been one person in Major League, two people in Major League Baseball history to lead. Now, I don't think RBIs is the greatest stat of all, but this is an interesting stat. There are two guys that have led the league in RBIs batting out of the number two hole. One is Ty Cobb, and the other is Mike Trout. Yeah, he's the MVP. That's it. That's all you need to say. He's the MVP. As easy as it is to name the MVP of the American League, is as easy as it will be to name the Cy Young of the National League.
Well, we'll get to that in a second.
You're right. Let's go to Cy Young in the American League.
Cy Young in the American League is not the easiest vote. When you look at the names, you know, there's one name that seems to be mentioned around, and which is Corey Kluber from Cleveland.
Yep.
But I'm going with Felix. Felix Hernandez finally pitching the. You know, one of the bigger things I've always said is you don't have to win an MVP or, you know, to be an MVP winner or to be a Cy Young winner, you don't have to be in the playoffs. But you have to be competitive run. But in my mind, you have to be playing in important games in September.
I agree.
And, you know, both Kluber and Hernandez did that. Chris Sale in Chicago didn't, which in a lot of ways eliminated him for me. Hernandez, I think, Hernandez is just the best pitcher in the American League at this point. And it'll be tight. And, you know, credit to Corey Kluber for really coming out of nowhere to be in the running for this. But I'm going to go with Felix.
Well, I'm going to go with Kluber. I think the Cy Young votes have had enough of Felix, and he won't win this year. The reason Sale doesn't win is because Sale pitched 50 less innings than either Hernandez or Kluber. And when you're looking at them all in a row, I think that 50 innings means a lot. So that's where I'm going there. Who's your rookie of the year in the American League?
As much as I would like to give it to one of the Yankee pitchers, either Tanaka or Betances, I think you have to give it to Jose Abreu. And it's kind of that cheap Ichiro pick where the guy, you know, he's been playing for 26, you know, he's 27 years old. He's been extremely, you know, he's not a 20-year-old rookie. But
How do you think about giving it to Tanaka then, who was 24?
I agree. I agree. It's the same thing. I would not, you know, as I said, even though I'd like to give it to, because I'm a Yankee fan.
But
reality is, if you're gonna go in that direction, you have to go to it with Abreu. I don't think there's any choice. I think he's a top five to ten MVP candidate as well.
Yeah, I think he may win it unanimously as well.
I agree.
Okay, so National League, let's go to Rookie of the Year first. There are two candidates here, and I'm giving it to the hometown guy. I think Jake DeGrom.
Yeah, I am too. I'm thinking that your choice, the other choice would have been Billy Hamilton.
Exactly.
But in a week, in a really weak year for National League candidates, Jacob DeGrom has been very, very solid in an otherwise truly forgettable season. In Flushing, not only is he one, I think he's I don't know his record off the top of my head, but I think some of the teams that he's beaten, some of the pitchers he's beaten, have been actually top level as well. You know, DeGrom was not groomed to be the ace of the staff with Matt Harvey and Wheeler and Noah Syndergaard in the near future, but you know DeGrom was looking very solid, and I think he is the I think he wins this relatively easily. As National League Rookie of the Year.
Well, people will point to the 55 steals that Billy Hamilton has, and that's all well and good. And granted, he did help my fantasy league in that category a lot. But he has the worst OBP, which is on-base percentage plus slugging percentage, in the major leagues in the second half of the year. The worst. That's kind of hard when you're the leadoff hitter that you should be doing that. He's also stolen about 55 bases, but he's been caught 25 times. So that kind of eliminates all his steals. So, yeah, I don't see how he wins this. I think DeGrom takes it home. And I'd like to say congratulations for not only pulling out a hockey reference, but pulling out a minor league baseball reference for the Mets. Man, you're on a roll tonight with Syndergaard. So,
anyway.
Hang on. Can we just skip over the Cy Young Award Award and just call it the Clayton Kershaw Award?
Yeah, I don't think there's much of a debate that Kershaw wins this. And for it seems like for the 10th straight year, Adam Wainwright's going to be in the top three and not win. I don't think he's won a Cy Young, but I think he's been there. I feel like he's been second or third 6 or 7 years in a row.
Adam Wainwright may be one of those guys that makes the Hall of Fame without winning a major award.
No, but
there aren't
going to
be many. And guess what? One of your guys, Jeter, is going to be one of those guys.
That is true.
Right? He won the Rookie of the Year award?
Yes, he did.
Okay, so he's won an award. But I don't think Wainwright's won an award.
Well, Jeter also won a World Series MVP.
Yeah, that's not one of the major awards I'm looking at. I'm looking at Rookie of the Year, Cy Young, or MVP. It's very hard to go through a Hall of Fame career. Well, I guess Mike Piazza won the Rookie of the Year, and not win one of those awards. It's very hard. So Wainwright may be one of those guys that does it, especially when it comes. It's much harder even for a pitcher because you have the Cy Young.
Agreed. And so, that leads to our final award choice.
Yeah, good luck with this one.
To be honest, it's a two-man race for me. Most people have the third in Giancarlo Stanton, but I kind of stick to my – if you're not playing important games in September, I find it very difficult to be an MVP.
So well, the choice is, wait a second. Wait, take a step back. Giancarlo Stanton, when he played – remember, he missed the month of the season, right? He missed the last month of the season. When he was playing important games.
Was Florida relevant in the world? Were they really relevant?
Well, they were a 500 team. They were in the wild card hunt. No, it was three games behind when he went out.
All right. So even so, including him, I'm still giving it to Clayton Kershaw. Kershaw is having, as you quoted the stats. He's 20-1 in his last. The team is 20-1 in the last 21 games. And even knowing he didn't pitch a month in April, I just want to read this stat. Except for one game against the Diamondbacks in mid-May, one game out of the 24, 25 that he's pitched this year, 27 he's pitched this year. Do you know what his ERA would be without that one game against the Diamondbacks? 1.34. That's inhuman. Yeah, that goes back to the Bob. That goes back to the Bob Gibson days when the pitching mound was lowered to give them more of an was higher to give them more of an advantage. Nobody had an ERA of 1.34.
No. Gibson was the year after. It was 67 that the mound was lowered. Gibson was in 68.
My fault. Well, that being said, still an incredible.
With you. I think it is Kershaw. So before we leave, I do want your opinion on something. And we got five more minutes, so this is a good place to do it.
No, we got we have 2 minutes.
Okay, so give me the impression quick. Gus Johnson is no longer the voice of soccer. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that I'm a casual fan and I like Gus Johnson. And it didn't, the problem is it's like the diehard football fans hating Joe Buck. Whatever Joe Buck, now I'm not a big Joe Buck guy, but whatever Joe Buck did in football was never going to be right. And the soccer kind of works the same way, that all the diehard soccer fans we're never going to accept Gus Johnson. He'll be, he'll do football, he'll do basketball, college hoops, he'll be fine. I didn't mind. And he seemed to really enjoy doing the game and making a conscious effort to do this. But sometimes these things just don't work. And at least Fox is doing this, with 3 years to go before the 18 World Cup and before the Champions League. So there are some times for a transition. I assume they're going to try and bring in one of the great British announcers, probably not Ian Dark, because that's the one that maybe Ian Dark from ESPN, but maybe one of the other ones as well.
I mean, I was a little disappointed. I really was, to be frank. I was looking forward to hearing Gus Johnson do only soccer for a while. And because he's now out of that, it kind of leads everything. They had a plan, and I'm a planner, and now the plan's gone awry. So where do you go from here? And it seemed a little bit anticlimactic after all the fuss that they put up with Gus Johnson going to Fox and just doing soccer.
Well, we got about a minute to go. Quickly, a shout-out. Ron Gardenhire was fired after 13 seasons in Minnesota. It led them to 6 division titles, but they couldn't get over the hump. In the last 3 or 4 years, they really have not been very good or competitive. And part of it's the talent. And, whether that's his fault or not is debatable. But the reality is the team is not winning. And it's probably time for somebody new. And Terry Ryan, the GM forever, feels like in Minnesota, has to start over. So a shout-out to him, and hopefully for the manager before him, Tom Kelly, who had a stroke last week, hopefully his health is in, hopefully he's recovering nicely.
Absolutely. Okay, yeah, so next week, next week we're going to have our NHL preview. Hopefully we'll have Sir Keegan Reid on. We'll try and get him on. For Seth Kamens, this has been Sean Palmer, backsportspage.com on Blog Talk Radio, and we'll catch you next week.
Good night, everybody.